A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode of the Four Center podcast feed is the Bad Batch Report.
Wow! Wow! Wow!
Wow, the noises get more exciting every episode. It started as Ken singing a little bit of theme music when I said Clone Wars Report or Bad Batch Report. And now we're getting down to, was that a Wrecker yelling in Doppler?
That was Wrecker tossing troopers. I think it was flying troopers. I was trying to add, I'm not a professional voiceover artist, but I was trying to do the
It's perfect. It's very, very good. It did sound a little like record, like swinging one clone trooper past the mic again and again. Beautiful.
Yeah.
There's always more a little difficult to do.
Yeah. Always a little bit of record in my heart. So yeah.
Absolutely. But that is one of the shining moments of the episode. Record just chucking troopers.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
A thing of great beauty, and we're going to be discussing that, I'm sure, for at least half of the episode. But we are excited to talk about everything in this episode. It is episode 10 of Bad Batch we're discussing. That episode is titled Common Ground. It is written by Gersimron Sandu, directed by Saul Ruiz, It's about a 24-minute long episode, and we are solidly into the second half of The Bad Batch this season, at least. I believe if all the reports are correct of 16 episodes, that means we got about 6 episodes left. How are you coping with that, Ken?
I am coping very well because I've been enjoying this slow roasting, even though it's a show full of action. And this episode, a ton of great action. I really love. But, you know, it's just the show keeps been talking about it, but it just presents itself in this somewhat of an older style. 16 episodes seems like, you know, it might as well be network television in 1982. It's so long and it's taken its time in a modern world of shorter seasons and where we just crave the big water cooler moments 6 episodes in and then we're done. And I just respect the hell out of what the show is doing. It's almost like to me, Joseph, they're saying, hey, we know we're probably not going to be as popular as Mandalorian. We're not going to get as much subscriptions in that business kind of world, but we're going to do what we want to do with this story.
Yeah, and I think it's really working for me because I think it is telling of fun episodic adventures. Each episode stands alone and can be the one where this happens, you know, the one where they rescue a separatist senator. But it is telling this great long story about the Bad Batch being stuck in this world of change and what's next for them and giving us this great picture across the galaxy of the horror of the Empire just immediately solidifying and immediately being terrible. And we've been talking about those ongoing stories throughout this this podcast. This episode, I think, really brought some of that stuff home. So let's get into overall reactions. Did you love this episode? Like it? Struggle with it?
Yeah, I really liked it. And it's funny, when the episode ended, I had this weird reaction. I just kind of went like, oh, okay. So that's kind of it with this episode. And not in a negative way, but just like, I really enjoyed what they did with that. And then I watched it again and really enjoyed it. This is a great World War II tank battle. This is Kelly's Heroes. I've seen people reference that online already today. Saving Private Ryan. Even in our own Discord, people were saying Battlefront 2 vibes. You get to just kind of run around, steal a tank. And, you know, in terms of Star Wars, looking at other genres or styles of movies and stories and pulling it into this galaxy, a good old World War II tank battle. I really enjoyed.
I really love that the reaction has been everything from this feels like, yes, a commando mission in a war kind of story to a video game, which makes sense because they have some storytelling overlap. But this one felt very video game to me in a great way, down to, oh, I'm controlling all the Bad Batch. I got to tab over to tech so I can take control of the camera so I can see who's around the corners. Like, I'm watching a show, right? There's not a controller in my hand. I'm not doing this, right?
Yeah, and you even had to choose your squad, and you left a member behind, and maybe that wasn't the right personnel move, you know?
Yeah, and is it an escort mission with the droid with GS-8, or is that just an ally tagging along? What is that? But yeah, I do not mean that. I know sometimes people are like, it was just a video game as a critique. Right. That, for me, is not a critique. In a way, it makes me feel more invested, because it was similar to some of the various Battlefront levels. So for me, I got this sort of a visceral involvement of, I've played scenes like this. I kind of feel that tension of, oh, who's right behind me? Yeah. Am I going to get shot? Oh, I'm going to make it out. But this tank I commandeered is so slow. Like, I viscerally felt it because I've experienced it in video game form.
Yeah. And that's something when you're like, what's this mission? I got to take down a walker on foot. Come on.
Oh, and then I got to steal one. It just marches so slow. It's so cool, but slow. I've seen other people talking about this being back to basics. And I think it was in terms of the adventure of the week aspect. But I think the storytelling that they got out of going back to the basics was really, really powerful and effective for moving the big picture story along. You know, I like that it is a little bit of a step backward, I think, particularly for Hunter, because he's concerned about Omega. He has made it clear over the last several episodes that whatever the Bad Batch's purpose is, whoever they're going to be, soldiers, mercenaries, rebels, whatever noun they're eventually going to adopt, what matters to him is protecting Omega. And he kind of has this step back of like, sure, you're part of the squad and I'm giving you an order to stay.
Yeah.
And so there's this kind of like, there's a little bit of this kind of relationship regression there.
Yeah.
Which then kind of makes sense that the episode is sort of getting back to like, well, this is a Bad Batch mission. We're going to try to sneak somewhere until it turns into explosions, which it absolutely will, because we're the Bad Batch.
Yeah. Yeah. I really enjoyed the setting, enjoyed how they presented it and the, kind of the well-balanced dual tones, right? Because we kept cutting back to Omega as a Minnesota Fats hustler in a billiard hall. And it was kind of fun and worked in that way too.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I've seen some people talk about, hey, it's this really great episode of it is back to basics and it's got this fun B story. And I think the B story is fun, but it also is really important to me. This is like important evolution in this question that they've been really clear on about how much does Omega get to be the squad, get to be a part of the squad like she wants to be, and how much can she be held back? How much is their responsibility to keep her safe versus let her go out and experience the world and face the challenges that she needs to grow up. And it was very much a part of that story. Mm-hmm. Will also be in a fun and funny B story.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
The other stuff for me, just overall, that really made me enjoy this episode is that, you know, this is just such a true Clone Wars sequel. It's literally fallout from the Clone Wars. It is in some ways the most accurate Clone Wars, because it's clones fighting clones, right. And I really like that the big guest star of the week, and I know that people have been up and down on how many guest stars, how many people you know from the past pop up, and I really like that the guest star this week wasn't Rex or Cad Bane, it was the Separatists.
Yeah.
The entire concept of not the the greedy Trade Federation and all of the other corporate alliance who have their own financial motivation and not the Sith manipulation of Dooku, but the actual systems who had disagreements, legitimate disagreements with the Republic, and getting to spend some time highlighting them was really great, as well as just keeping that focus that everywhere the Bad Batch goes, they're going to be affected by the reality of the galaxy around them, that the Empire is here and everything is changing.
Yeah, it's fair to say Raxus may be the big special guest star of the week, right?
Oh, absolutely. I went deep to confirm all of my Raxus remembrances, and so we can dig into Raxus in our canon section.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I agree with it. But yeah, no, it was. I had that thought too of just when you're watching these ATTEs just tranch around and clone troopers, stormtroopers. I'm calling them stormtroopers now, but really they're clones almost from the first batch of Attack of the Clones. And
yeah, storm clones
there you go. That's and then this just straight up talk about Separatists. I great point and great pool. That's the guest star.
Yeah, Raxus and the Separatists in this particular episode in Common Ground. Last thing for me, big picture, is I had some anxiety last week wanting confirmation that Omega did keep a hold of her crossbow throughout her adventures of being kidnapped by Cad Bane. And I was thrilled to see it back on her back. So Omega's crossbow is safe. That's all I needed out of this episode. With that, let's get into the big themes. What ideas were at stake in this episode to you?
Well, yeah, a big shotgun blast for me here, right? There, I mean, there was a lot. I got to tell you, the first viewing, you and I are generally the same. I know we'll maybe make a note here and there, action moment for comedy moment, but I'll dig into the themes later over a cup of coffee, maybe later in the day or later in the morning. I was like, man, this is, I thought maybe there's one or two. Then you look at it, there's this idea of being useful, feeling useful, live to fight another day, literally said. I'm like, well, that's kind of an interesting question. Maybe not a theme, but a question. How do you do that? Why do you doing something about it? Actions building trust. But the two ones I want to really highlight here, one's a parenting thing. This is a show about parenting, as is Mandalorian. And mom, if you're listening, overprotection doesn't necessarily protect the ones you're trying to protect. It's about you, right? It's a form of attachment, this fear. And I thought that was at play a lot where I am not going to hold Hunter too close to the flames on his decision. Again, until you put Omega in armor, I'm Omega in armor is my hashtag. I understand where he came from, but just he learned along the way that was more about his fear and more about his, I don't want to say even stunting her growth or putting a cover over her, the light of her purpose here, if she was a candle, I get where it came from, but then you have to learn to grow past that and that he feels it instinctually on the mission to, you and Omega go here. Well, she's not here, which is a great fun moment. So anyways, that parental theme was big for me.
Yeah, no, I had written this down under our kind of larger Star Wars themes, but I'm really glad that you brought it up right away because it's one of the big things of the episode is I think, you know, Star Wars obviously has a lot to say about fear, that if you give into it, it leads to horrific things. If you just try to avoid it, that's not great either. You have to face it. I think there's also moments in Star Wars where you kind of have to assess, is somebody afraid of something that might happen in the future and obsessing on it? Or does somebody have a legitimate concern that, yes, a very bad thing is like 80% likely to happen. So you got to be prepared for that.
Right.
And that's the way I was thinking about some of those elements of my first viewing. It washed over me in a great way, the idea of Omega wanting to be a part of the squad and kind of being pushed away. But the second time I watched it, when Hunter says at the beginning, like, look, after everything she's been through, the kid needs a break. It just felt like I wanted to see some text appear on the screen that said, lie, lie, lie. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. That's about you, Hunter. You need a break from being frightened that something is going to happen to her.
Yeah.
So like on the one hand, you have his sort of like his fear based reaction of keep her there. But I love what you're saying is I think there could be more of a legitimate concern reaction of like going back to the advice that Sue LaQuain gave him of kids are going to get into trouble. You got to let them grow up. You got to be there to protect him. So like Hunter, instead of holding her back, give her some armor.
Give her some armor. Yeah.
Because keeping her at home, the fantasy of she'll never be in danger, that's fear.
Yeah.
Giving her some armor is legitimate concern.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I love that you pulled that exchange. The kid's been through a lot. She needs a break and wreck her. She seems fine to me. She's probably more in tune with what's going on. And it's this idea of being useful. You know, again, I if you're going to tell me, Omega's pretty special, right? She's not just some average, 10, 11, 12 year old kid going around or whatever age she might actually be in the cloning process here.
Around 13, I think.
Yeah. That seems about right. This is like, hey, we're going to go down to the park. You want to come? No, this is like, you're going to a potential war zone. I understand it. But I think what you're saying is really valuable, Joseph, where it's like you go back a few beats to where he's just now, to me, looking for the excuse to keep her back.
Right, right. This could have been, hey, the friendliest person in the world needs to be picked up on Pillow Planet. It is the safest planet in the galaxy. you're going to have 1,800 other guards with you, and Hunter would have said, too dangerous for you, kid. Like,
yeah.
He had legitimate concern. It is taking her into this Imperial stronghold, as he says, to Sid. So there is legitimate concern, but it doesn't feel like he's wrestling with the concern and finding a way forward. He's just giving into fear.
Yeah, and you just pitched the greatest Star Wars middle grade reader ever, the rescue to Pillow Planet. Something we need now. Yeah, almost jumped to the end, but just when she... Now, Hunter doesn't know at this moment that she's really good at Dejeric and she can help Sid con people and make money and help pay off the debt. Hunter doesn't know that. He can't probably see that. I'm going to defend Hunter a little bit. I think overall, not necessarily to you, but to the overall conversation in Star Wars. But the idea of her just being like, I want it to be useful. And even if he was like, hey, I got to leave you behind here, but maybe you could do this for us here, or maybe this is someone going, that's part of it too. Is that the right way? No, probably would have been throw some knee pads on her and get her to the battle. But you know what I mean? Like it's all part of the picture.
Yeah. Knee pads for Omega now. Yeah, I think the usefulness thing is so important because I think that's a little bit what's going on when he is forgetting that Omega's not on the mission. When he says, you and Omega go here, and Tech's like, she's not here.
Yeah.
Is not just to me about Hunter missing her. It's about the fact that through the show, we have seen her not just be somebody who needs to be protected. She is not an annoying escort mission on a video game that just walks into fire. She has been a valuable member of the squad who has done things and seen things that the other clones couldn't or didn't because she does have her own unique, valuable skill sets.
Well said. Yeah, it is that feeling of it wasn't just like, it's like she's already part of the team. You know this. You've made this decision. She's earned it. And just to have that casual like, oh, that's your gut telling you, hey, you may have made a mistake there, Hunter.
Yeah. Yeah. What's your other big theme?
Yeah. Big one for me is changing your future while challenging your past.
Ooh.
This common ground theme. Great idea. Just even the TV guide entry when you clicked on Disney Plus. You know, the Bad Batch has their ideology change. Oh, we're going good. We're going to where we kind of, because you and I were talking last week, our expectation going forward for the next episode was around like Bad Batch kind of blank or get off the pot, man. Like,
decide. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And they are still resisting that, or at least Hunter is. I don't think the others are questioned as much. It feels like the others are just kind of trying to get through. Echo's made his perspective clear that he kind of agrees with Trace and Rafa, with the Martez sisters, of like, choice is coming. We could be out there with Rex, you know. And then it seems like Tech and Wrecker are just getting by. And Hunter's the one who's like, I'm not sure what we're going to do. It was great in this episode to be reminded of this very concrete thing of, not only has Sid threatened them in the past of like, I know you're valuable, it'd be a shame if I told somebody about that. Mm-hmm. But now she's really pressing this in this episode, this very specific thing of, you know, you can't go anywhere until you pay me off because you've screwed up these other jobs. And right. I've charged you docking fees.
Mental mix fees. Yeah, yeah. It's fascinating because Bad Batch, great to point out Echo. The Bad Batch is a team, but mostly Hunter, maybe the lead singer of this band, has been contemplating a change. Should we go country? I don't know. We've been rock for so long. But then, I love that this episode, when faced with just simply helping a separatist and a droid, man, Hunter specifically, but even the rest of the group, they're ready to maybe back off that change. Maybe not Echo. And again, a distinct lack of Echo sometimes in these episodes. I know that comes up every now and then in conversation. But I was fascinated by that, Joseph. Just the idea of like, we like to make some changes. Oh, not that change, because it's just so tied to your past and where you were.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think for me, that was, you're touching on the two big themes that, the way I framed him is definitely this idea of choice, which mm-hmm. I want to come back to in a minute. But I really thought that a ton of the episode took its cue from that central TV guide entry, as you said, mm-hmm. about, ooh, the Bad Batch has their ideology challenged. Mm-hmm. I felt like almost everyone and everything did. There was, to me, this theme of the appearance or the assumption of the thing versus the more complex truth mm-hmm. that either there's a judging a book by its cover and that's not what it is, or there's a, hey, maybe that person, that idea used to mean this, but things change and there's a more complex truth. So we got layers and layers of this, in my opinion. We're starting with a very familiar version of this, that the Empire kind of claims one appearance when we know that there's a more complex truth, right? They mm-hmm. are literally in this episode, we've got that Imperial out front talking about unity and cooperation, and then is, you know, immediately arresting and torturing people. So we have like unity in the front, torture in the back, right?
Which is a great hairstyle, but not a good
terrible way. Hairstyle, but a true one for the Empire. Unity in the front, torture in the back. And then I think we've got this big one that Echo is really the one specifically pushing. That he does not want to rescue a separatist because mm-hmm. separatists are what they are to his mind, you know? Yeah. And then I don't think it's oversold, but I think Echo really sees that Avi Singh is not what Echo mm-hmm. thinks of as a separatist, right?
Yeah.
Echo has faced torture from Wat Tambor, from corporatists and greedy people, and faced, you know, seeing Sith Lords in action and all that. And I don't think Echo has seen this, a leader who truly deeply cares about their people to the point who is almost so selfless, he's going to turn around and do something dumb, something suicidal, right? It'd be like, well, I can't let them go, so I'm just going to march back into the Empire's hands, you know, and echo scene, the complex truth instead of just the simple appearance or the surface assumption is, to me, like, that's the big moment of this episode.
That's another well said and connected to his past too, and just everything he's explained or everything he's experienced. Yeah, I think that's a great starting point and a big point, as you said. And again, this episode starts with even Senator Avi Singh, excellently portrayed. Alexander Siddig, let's give him a shout out. Game of Thrones and many, many other things.
Deep Space Nine is my touchstone
for him. Great casting. He just has that kind of. You know, just kind of, there's something in his voice. There's thoughtfulness all through his performance. And just the fact that he must look back at what he thought of the Republic You know, he kind of mutters a little stuff about that and then just has that moment. And the freedoms he may have wanted, you mentioned being, a good separatist. Or, you know, I know what you mean by that for sure. But he's got to change now and see things for what it is. You got Captain Bragg, just the Empire's not your enemy. And how he feels the truth and has that feeling and must confront it there too, just like Echo will.
Yeah. No, and I agree with you. I think the performance, the writing is great. The performance and the direction of the performance really sells it. You just don't doubt the sincerity of this person who wants to do right by his people, you know, and there is that larger story of the separatists that people like Mina Bonteri that we meet in the Clone Wars have legitimate grievances. And then those get twisted and manipulated by Count Dooku, who is a Sith Lord, who is then partnered with greedy corporations who just want to make money off of suffering. So then this general idea of things kind of having this surface level appearance in a more complex truth or a changing truth. Mm-hmm. You already mentioned it, but there's a real horror of seeing the AT-TE, which we are used to as an audience as the vehicles of the Republic, of the clones, of the Jedi's heroes, suddenly being this marching force of authoritarianism and terror, right? To see them close in and pin the crowd, and that one shot of the walker just kind of walking over another walker is literally just like, you know, talk about the boot being pressed down. That's literally just kind of, we don't care about anything, just crunching, marching forward. The clones who, you know, were the brothers of the Bad Batch, they're a little cranky about Regs, but like this whole episode is them shooting down with stun guns, their brothers. So there's a lot of just kind of visual, like this thing that even as Star Wars fans, this exact same image used to signify a different meaning has now entirely changed its meaning in this timeline, in this part of the timeline. And then I think Omega's desire to be usefulness, useful, mm-hmm. and her actual skills are a huge part of this idea of things are not just what they seem, right? It's easy mm-hmm. to write her off as just a kid. And even Sid is doing that, right? Sid is like, you're a kid, so scrub. That's what kids are good for, kid.
It's a hard knock life for me. Yeah.
Yeah, and then there's this realization that there's a more complex truth, you know, mm-hmm. that she is part of the squad, that she does end up paying off the debts, that she's got this valuable skill. It's a funny B story, but it is a part of everything that is going on in the episode of things being more complex than they appear on the surface. And I think we even get that a little bit with Sid, where we know that she is for sure a hardcore mercenary who does things for money, but she even has some empathy for Omega, you know? Mm. She's mean to her and then gets called out in that great moment with Bolo and Catch.
Yes.
Shaking their heads. And then she does go over and try to be kind of nice to her. So we see this side of Sid that we haven't entirely seen before, this more complex truth, you know?
Yeah, we definitely know Sid's motivations, but I think at that moment there was something more beyond that. I really want to like Sid. I do. Maybe because we're both fans of Rhea Perlman and Cheers, I guess. I don't know. Maybe that's it. But yeah, I want to like her. And she has those great moments where I think she the facade drops. And I thought there was a couple there.
Yeah, absolutely. Last couple of things for me in this theme. We've seen Raxus before in the Clone Wars, but I think we were really getting to see it through the eyes of the Bad Batch. I really love that line from Hunter, who said, "I always thought we'd make it to Raxus someday, but not like this."
Love it.
So
love
that. That was such a we are closing in on, you know, on Nazi Germany, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is there'll be a hot time in the old town of Berlin. Fantasy in Hunter's mind of like, we are going to go that when we win the war, we're going to go in guns blazing to take Raxus. Yep. And instead he's sneaking in to this beautiful planet. And I know we've seen it before, but from the perspective of the Bad Batch, like this is the heart of the Sepies. This mm-hmm. is the heart of the enemy. It's a gorgeous city and a beautiful forest.
Yeah.
It's just another way to really reinforce the I think that main driving thing from Echo of separatists are this and they are bad. And here, even their planet, there's nothing bad about it. It's beautiful.
Mm. Yeah. Again, Raxus, what a guest star.
What a guest star. And last thing for me, you mentioned this, the there's that little hint of not being a fan of droids when there's some fun back and forth with GS-8 and and Hunter even going droids. But a lot of great stuff with, you know, GS-8 being pushed out of her comfort zone and stepping up to the plate and kind of being more than what they assume she's going to be capable of, even down to the vase, right? The vase is a fun joke, but the vase is another thing where here, from GS-8's perspective, the vase is an object of honor and status and tradition. And in this shifting reality, the vase's value shifts. Right. And it is now an object of change and necessity from the perspective of Sing.
That's a great point. Funny beat. You know, who doesn't like throwing a vase at someone's head? You know, it's just fun. I absolutely, the shifting tides definitely at work all through this episode.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk a little bit more about choice too. Did you have more thoughts on the general theme of choice in this episode?
I just, you know, time and time again, what's in front of you again, starting with Senator Ave Singh. And to me, it's in a roundabout way makes me think of some of Finn's stuff in episode 9and Janna, just the idea of, you know, a feeling, and we all have those gut feelings when something just isn't right and you have to make that decision, the big decision that could cost you your life. Ave Singh, you know, I don't think he's thinking he's going to get house arrest and some nice crumpets in the morning. He knows what's coming. And he does what's right. And so all through this episode, choices about going forward, choices of doing what you got to do.
Yeah, no, I really, really like that you highlighted that. That to me is one of the other big themes of not just this episode, but this whole show. It's been an idea in Star Wars, stated other places, that this era will always, you know, destiny is going to come for you. You're going to have to make a choice. None of us can avoid, you know, quote unquote, getting involved forever. But particularly this time in the galaxy where the Empire is changing things massively and immediately and in a way that is going to affect everybody. Maybe rich people can kind of skate out of suffering as much, but the entire galaxy is going to change. So it is these moments of, you know, personal decision about your own path, but it's all framed by this big galactic decision of either you're going to give in to the Empire or eventually you are going to resist and rebel in some way. And that's kind of the choice in front of everyone. And this episode, I think, really put a focus on that of this through line is they've had close calls with getting involved with, you know, proto rebellion jobs, right? The Martez sisters with, actually just expressed to them out loud, like, you're going to have to choose, right? Right. Rex makes it really clear that there's still some of us out there still fighting. Echo kind of agitates for, maybe we should be doing that. And Hunter's like, no, we just got to do our thing, keep our head down and do our thing. And here they are, keeping their head down, doing their thing, and they're being sent on a mission which could be interpreted as a rebel mission, right? The Separatists used to be the bad guys from their perspective, but now they're going to be their allies. They're going to be the ones standing up against the Empire. So despite trying to avoid it, this is a rebel mission for the Bad Batch in my mind when I watch it.
Oh, I hear Tyrion Lannister saying, you're in the great game now. You're here. You've made the decision. And I hope going forward, we'll talk about that later in the episode, I hope that there's some ramifications for that.
Yeah, no, I hope so, too. And we talked about this a lot, but in terms of the escaping choice, you know, Omega wants to be a part of the action, wants to be a part of the world, and Hunter can't change that. He just needs to work with it. Get her some armor. Get her some knee pads.
Yeah.
Deal with your fear. But then the other thing for me, kind of on the big picture, is there are a couple places in this episode where they highlighted different people's desire to not engage in larger truths, right? When Echo first brings up, and Hunter brings up, they're like, you want us to help a Separatist? And Sid says, a job's a job. Just wants to boil it down to, we don't need to get involved in all that. And then once they land on Raxus, it's even stated very, very clearly, right? There's an exchange of dialogue where Tech says, the client being a Separatist is not relevant. Tech is trusting him because the code's worked out. So Tech says, the client being a Separatist is not relevant. Echo says, it is to me. And Hunter literally says, forget politics. We're here to do a job. Like, Hunter, I know that's what you want to do, but you are rescuing a political prisoner from a government. You're involved in politics.
I love that Hunter's like, don't make Star Wars political.
It really is. And it is. I understand the don't make everything political 24/7 because it's stressful. And sometimes we need some escape and some and a break from it.
Yeah.
But when you're telling a story like this, I think that there is an importance to accepting what I believe to be a reality is even things that feel like little micro decisions are affected by the larger political structure and who is succeeding and who is suffering and why those things are at work around us, whether we acknowledge them or not. And that's a great moment from Hunter and from Sid of like, we just want to be people who do jobs. We don't want to be political. It's just a job where we rescue a political prisoner from the former central world of this huge antagonist who is just defeated. It's not political at all. We're just stealing them from the government that we used to work for, but now we don't like. Nothing political.
Nothing political here. Move along, folks. Move along.
Exactly. Exactly. So I thought that was great that it was kind of underlined so much as to literally put the words in one of the main characters' mouth of, it's not political. Don't worry about it.
I'm laughing. I really did find it's deep and has great meaning without a doubt. But yeah, I thought that was, I don't necessarily think it was a super, super intentional meta moment, by the way, but I just, it absolutely should be.
Yeah. I mean, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It is called Star Wars, and wars are motivated by things, and those things are often politics. It's not like the Sith really hate the Jedi because they prefer the color red and they just hate the colors blue and green. You know, it's
I don't, yeah, I have an ongoing conversation with a friend of mine who's always upset that I'm destroying his, pop songs for him by me telling him the true meaning of them. And I'm like, look, you could dance to them, but the song's about heroin addiction. It's there whether you want to engage with it or not.
Yes, I love that idea. Now I'm going to picture that as Hunter of like, forget the song meanings. We're here to dance.
Semi-charged kind of life is a great just rock song to dance to and about heroin addiction. Hunter.
It can be both. It can be both, right? This is a great heroin song to dance to. Any other themes from this episode before we dive into kind of bigger ideas from Star Wars?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could mold it in, but just I mentioned actions build trust, and that comes up. And again, this episode had a lot of like lines said, like dialogue saying, hey, I'd like to be useful, live to fight another day. And one of them was just the idea of actions build trust, and Sing saying, you're going to have to trust me because everyone's making choices in this world. If you've just, wonderfully discussed with Joseph, but now you make a choice and the people around you are like, great, great choice. What does that mean? And along the way, there's just Hunter doesn't trust Sid to watch Omega. And she even says, you shouldn't, but money's my motivation. Bad Batch clearly doesn't trust Sig and GS8. And along the way, just actions build trust, and that's comes out of choices. And that's, I think, when you make a choice, you have to be aware about that too, of like, it needs to be pure and complete, and my choice needs to breed some action that's going to breed trust, which will move all of us forward.
I think that's a really great assessment of this episode, and I think a really great way to look at some of the larger ideas in Star Wars is people will eventually show you who they are. I mean, I think that goes back to Han Solo. He says money, money, money. But the actions, what he chooses to do, who he chooses to help, shows people who he really is.
Yeah, indeed.
For me, in terms of a big Star Wars theme, it's really this one moment. But I was affected by the fact that what really seems to change things for Echo is everything you're describing. With judging Avi Singh by his actions. He gives them the correct clearance codes. He helps them. He throws his precious vase and he helps them all escape. He is not leading them into a trap or a blind alley. He is exactly what he says on the tin.
Mm-hmm.
He, at least to them in this moment, he is trying to help his people. But it's that moment where he really is like, I can't leave them. And it's Echo who says, no, your droid's right. You know, live to fight another day. Is that's a big thing for Echo to say to a separatist. And I feel like the Star Wars theme at work there is that Star Wars so often argues that being an individual is important, but helping other people in being selfless is a huge virtue. And like one of the ways that you can truly show somebody else that you are to be trusted is if you are willing to put yourself out there for others. And it seems like that's the thing that for Echo really solidifies. If this guy is willing to turn around and go back and fight for his people, even when it's not a good idea, he's not going to be able to do anything for them now, and he's still contemplating it, mm-hmm. that this must be a decent person.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that just huge selflessness is a virtue idea in Star Wars.
Pretty big. Giving up yourself for a bigger cause, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. It really is. So any other thoughts for you on how this episode reflects the larger story and perspective of Star Wars?
For me, this a lot of stuff I was talking about, you know, changing your future while challenging your past, what that kind of translates to me in the bigger picture is this idea of just in terms of the canon and where we are, where we're going to in the Star Wars timeline. This is a perfect setup about transitioning into the modern age of the rebellion, which is still, we know, is almost going to be like a 19-year process. And this idea of who is in the bunker with you now is more important than how they got there. And again, it's about choice and actions breeding trust and all those things and, you know, the big virtue stuff you're talking about too. But is that always, I just love that along the way, all these people from Han to Infant's Nest to Radis and all the Rogue One scoundrels getting in there, like, and that's kind of where we're heading on the Star Wars timeline. And I just love seeing it start to form how this separatist senator is going to be like, well, this isn't right. This new empire isn't right. What are we going to do about it? And eventually he's going to run into probably a senator he fought with it, you know, in the hallways over debates over policy and stuff. It's going to be like, no, not you. But it's like, we're both rebels now.
Yeah.
I love that idea.
Yeah, and I really hope we get to see some of that, right? That from the perspective of somebody like Avi Singh, you know, the episodes in the Clone Wars, there are so many episodes about Padme trying to get a dialogue going again. And you got to imagine that Avi Singh is the kind of senator who would be like, yeah, no, if we could address the things that I'm concerned about in the Republic, that would be great. But instead, from his perspective, it's just all of his worst fears about the Republic coming true in the form of the Empire.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah. Powerful stuff. Any other big picture thoughts before we take a quick break?
No. A lot of little building blocks, of course, but that was the big one that jumped out to me.
Excellent. Yes, me too. So I think the big picture takeaway is, as you said, Omega needs some knee pads in particular. Yeah. Start building the armor from there.
Something. Maybe even a stronger boot to wear. I don't know. Something. A cape, a poncho, something. A little more protection.
Yeah, a cape. That's what she needs. That's what they'll keep her safe in the galaxy. A cape for Omega. We are going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back to discuss all of the fun and great moments and all the canon in this episode of The Bad Batch. We will be right back.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, 4 Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4 Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
And we are back to finish our discussion of episode 10 of The Bad Batch, Common Ground. We're going to talk favorite action moments. Ken, this one really was building. There wasn't action for a while, then it was sneaky action, then it was explosive action. What were your favorite moments?
I just first wrote down ATTE action, 3 exclamation points. Yeah, I mentioned the tank stuff up top. This is weird. Am I realizing I am a World War II tank warfare aficionado? I don't know. You hear a joke, some guys hit middle age and that's what they suddenly become. World War II tank aficionados. I don't know. But I loved this. I loved the episode. It did remind me of some of the things I mentioned. Kelly's Heroes, Saving Private Ryan, some of those big moments. It was video games. I had a little bit of Star Wars pew, pew, pew action, excitement in me, I should say. And also, the side note, ATTEs look like mid-sized dogs crawling around a couch looking for treats. I've never really paid attention that they have dog butts in the back.
I think it became more clear when we really got to see their tank kind of lay down.
Yes.
Well, we were run down this hallway and we ran out of places to go and we're kind of tired. So we're just going to lower ourselves onto our belly and feel the cool ground on our belly. Like, this tank is a dog.
Yeah, I know it's been a week of Clifford discourse on Twitter, but this had the same energy to me. Just, and then that one that you mentioned it from a thematic point of view, but just the idea of the one crawling over the other one. I'm like, that looks like my chihuahua climbing on a pillow.
Yeah, this was just such a treat, right? The ATT has always been one of the fun vehicles of the General Clone Wars era, just aesthetically cool, and it was great to spend a lot of time with them doing a lot of different things, being a means of escape for our heroes and also just a means of terror for our heroes.
Yeah.
For me, action moments, I really liked. I liked Hunter being surprised by the one clone trooper. They're doing such a good job being quiet, and the door opening, and the Hunter just happened to grab that clone trooper and smash his head into vases and walls. He's like, this is the quietest I can be. It's not that quiet.
Love that. Yeah, love that one.
Yeah. We mentioned this at the top, but one of my very, very favorites from this episode, arguably it could be under our comedy moments as well, but Wrecker chucking the unconscious storm clones out of the ATTE. You know, I've been on about lately people falling from high places.
Yeah.
This isn't that high, but it still is just that out the window you go. And then the great button of Wrecker saying they'll feel that in the morning.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's not even cruel. It's not even like a cool, like a James Bond zinger of making fun of somebody you've defeated. It's almost like he's just reflecting on like, wow.
Yeah.
They're going to be effed up.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's just the way it is.
Yeah. Love. Yeah. Yeah. Wrecker's just been comedy gold. Literally, Tech's been comedy gold in other ways, but Wrecker's been comedy gold and just, loud and boisterous and being who he is. And this is another Wrecker comedy win.
Yeah, absolutely. Any more action moments from you?
Yeah, one of the bigger sequences is just the taking of the first ATTE. And by the way, I will call them AT-Ts if you all let me still use AT-AT without scorn. AT-AT, which comes to, I think that's from Young Guns as well. So that just was some good old fashioned action, right? And just GSA kind of like, how are you going to do that? Love that. And then that whole sequence later on when ATT's dog butt is shot and it collapses. Hunter sliding as he stuns the storm clones. John Wick, like, just a great little, and then the stun little circles. Boo, boo, boo. I just, the 7-year-old Kenny pumped his fist.
Oh, yeah, that was on my list, too. There's a lot of cool action and there's a lot of cool stunning. But the slide and just that reminder of, like, the Bad Batch is worth however many troops. Right. They're they're good. They're better than these regs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Love that.
While we're on it, I want to ask you, how are you feeling about the all stun all the time? Is that giving you a thrill? Are you happy to see that that's the Bad Batch's MO? What are your reactions to it?
I thought about it more than any week prior because, I don't know, maybe it's because of the discussion we had about the Rising Storm. No spoilers if you haven't read the book. But, Jedi in combat have to make some decisions, and killing isn't something they're going to do easily ever. And so that was maybe in my head. And you and I were not debating between us, but just debating the idea of just like, does that hurt the Jedi at some point? Should they kill when they're fighting the Nile? Should they do things a little differently? A great moral question to ask yourself in the heat of battle. So this one, it popped in my head. I'm like, but I don't know. Are those clones going to get up and be thankful that you stunned them? Or are they going to come at you harder? I don't know. But at the end of the day, of course, the Bad Batch is going to do that. They're dealing with what's going on. They're processing with this big switch in the galaxy. And I wouldn't want them to be just willy-nilly killing those that were their brothers and still are.
Yeah, I really, really love it. It's a great contrast that the clones influenced by the Empire, influenced by Order 66, by their inhibitor chips. They're not shooting sunbolts.
Right.
And it really does give this great perspective of the Bad Batch of, obviously, they're doing their mission. They have not always got along with all their brothers. They can be kind of salty to regs. It seems like some regs we see from that lunchroom scene,
right,
that mess hall scene, maybe kind of jealous or mock them or ostracize them for being different. So maybe there's no love lost there between the regs. But you got to think, with an episode like this, with just dozens of stuns, that our friends from the Bad Batch looking at every one of those people that they stun going, if we had time, we could take your chip out.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't do this.
Right.
How much of this is your choice?
Mm. Yeah, that's an excellent point.
Yeah. So I love this stun. Great to hear your thoughts.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to action. Any other moments for you?
One final one that I noted, and a lot of great action all the way through. Again, I could list every firing of the main cannon of ATTs, whether the one that was forced away and then destroys the tower in the back, which is also kind of like a World War II picture, bit of action. There was a great shot. It was post action, but I put it in the action. Great shot of melted metal dripping off the walker. And that's something I haven't really seen in Star Wars, but as particularly animation before. At least that hasn't jumped out to me. I really love that little shot.
Oh, yeah. No, the one that they were escaping in was dripping oil, according to the subtitles, but metal too. So like you said, that dog is having some bladder issues.
Yeah. Just those all red and lava like and just good image.
Yeah, it was. It was really like the truth of battle, right? This mm-hmm. kind of aesthetic truth of injury.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great stuff. Yeah, I really loved Wrecker manually pulling the cannon away. I think he says something like, "Nah."
Yeah.
And that it's just big, beefy, strong arm that pulls it off off course to shoot that tower. Last action beat for me is the vase chucking. The vase, I think, also straddles comedy and action, but I really liked that through line with the vase. It was a fun little grace note to me. It had thematic resonance, but it's also just fun, and it was a nice surprise when it came hurtling out of the tank. Mm. And the delivery when GS8 says senator.
Yeah.
And he says very calmly, I never much cared for that vase. It's a great moment of action and comedy.
Absolutely, indeed.
All right, with that, then let's transition fully into comedy. What were some of your favorite comedy moments?
Yeah, the comedy, whimsy, weirdness all through this episode of fun little moments. Just starting with Omega sharing the Mento mix. It's a great runner for me. I love it. It's just adorable, just endearing, that word we always use with Omega, but just like it's great and dropping a piece into his mouth. There's that. I love that little moment.
Yeah, and thing that I caught on the second viewing, partially because it's really highlighted by the subtitles, is Echo sniffing the Mantel mix to see if it's something that he'd be interested in, which I still would take more focus on Echo. But yeah. I do think the some of the beats that Echo had, like that simple comedy moment, made him pop a little bit more, where he is, you know, he's got a little bit of our perspective from watching the Clone Wars. He went through mm-hmm. the Clone Wars, you know, more or less with us. He's seen the same things. He knows Cad Bane like we know Cad Bane. He has that same strong reaction to separatists that we might. And he's got a little bit of like, I'm really not sure about our path. I'm really not sure that we're choosing the right steps forward. I'm not even sure about this Mantel mix. I'm going to sniff that to see if it's up to snuff.
Yeah.
So very, very funny.
Indeed.
More funny moments or moments of comedy, whimsy and weirdness for you.
Yeah, there is what Bolo and Ketch shaking their heads at Sid was great. And I just gonna say Ketch specifically for me is just really funny. Just a couple moments in this episode too, during the game where he just kind of leans on the Pentord and sorry buddy. I just love everything. You kind of good again. You got Carla from Cheers running around. I need some good bar denizens, you know, to wrap up the story.
They had a real Norm and Cliff vibe to me this week, where they're simpatico on certain things and then they have some conflict. Absolutely great moment where they shake their head, and great point of view to just see it from Sid's perspective of them shaking their heads. I'm sure it is already a gif, and it is one that I think I'll be needing a lot. I am. Nuh-uh. Can't believe you did that. So after that moment of simpatico, and they're there all the time together, after they get beat by Omega helping Sid out, they get mad at each other and take it outside. Like, hey, come on. You seem like your best buddies. Like, does take it outside mean like, you know, they're going to go argue in private, or like, are they really going to go outside and beat each other up? Like, it seems like you only have each other, Bolo and Ketch. Do you really want to fight?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, this is the story we need. We need Bolo and Ketch, a standalone story.
I've seen some calls for it. They're very cool.
I love that.
I love the design of Bolo. Very great. Other moments for you.
Yeah, the Omega has a great I told you moment with an eyebrow smirk after Sid loses the game there. I love that little moment there. The very first stormtrooper that makes gets stunned just has this wonderful weird gurgle. It just like, I don't know, it's just jumped out. That almost was the sound cue for this week, but
I love stun gurgles. Those are the best.
You mentioned the vase moment. When they first take, because GS8's like, you can't, I'm paraphrasing, but just like, you can't, how are you going to take that walker? And then they do, and she says, nicely done.
yeah. I like the way that they bond. I like the way that she's like, oh, you're very direct. I like you. And after they push her out into service, she's like, okay, I get it. You want me to go first and distract them. Okay, I'll do that from now on.
Yeah.
Great stuff. The vase catch to me was very funny. Not only her line of like, this vase was gifted to Senator Singh for his years of service, just the awkward pose that she went into to catch it. I also think I just appreciated this droid because she felt unique enough, but it wasn't like this big swing to be like, let's create a really different droid. Like she seemed like her and 3PO could, you know, have an oil bath together and kind of have the same perspective, just trying to take care of my person.
Swap some person stories.
Yep. Yeah. Did they ever throw something valuable? Oh, yeah. They're always throwing valuable things.
Yeah.
Love that. They tell you to protect it and then they throw it at a trooper. It's always the way, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. One final Wrecker moment. Just again, always love Wrecker's reactions, but just laughing. There was a little laugh he gives as he tosses a stun grenade into the ATTE. He's like, love this.
Oh yeah, no, that's a real good one. The great, oh ho ho. He's like, I wonder how this is gonna go. Like, you know, a couple moments for me. Sid was great. I love the way it is such amazing delivery by Rhea Perlman from years of experience on Cheers that she can just deliver those nicknames with just such venom of the two early on. I'm not interested in a history lesson, goggles. When Tex reading his Wikipedia entry about Raxus. Yeah. And then when Hunter is giving her guff, she says, yeah, bandana.
Oh, yeah. Bandana was one of my favorite ones.
Absolutely great. Two more for me. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Omega is very endearing. And a part of that is just this really great delivery that's incredibly believable for the character, but like just very specific. And I thought this episode really knocked it out of the park. The delivery when she was, you know, moping too much, that sorry.
Yeah.
that was capital E endearing, I thought.
Yeah, and then with, you know, great direction in the episode as always, and you know, we every week it's become the show's so beautiful, and you know, and I don't ever want to overlook that because it is, and it's a new level of animation. There were some great Omega moments where it's like did they motion capture Michelle Aang as she was doing, because it just was so, the voice, the movement, the eyes, everything about these character designs, the way they're moving now in these shows, it's just it's nothing short of spectacular. And you know, I guess we shouldn't be shy about calling it out every week, because it's wonderful.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing. And it's one of the things that makes this show such a treat is it's beautiful and delivered so well, and it's just really, really well made.
My final note on that is just in a larger conversation, but a lot of, over the years, you know, what are the shows we want, and sometimes you and I and many other Star Wars fans will be like, well, what if we were, you know, a Luke animated show? And I think years past would have been like awesome, but I don't know, how would that look? And I just think even the beauty of Resistance, I don't want to overlook that. What's going on with this Clone Wars season 7? The idea of getting some big legacy characters in an animated tale, it's now more exciting to me than ever before because of what they're doing in series like this.
Yeah, I mean, imagining Luke's Jedi Temple rendered like this with him training a young Ben Solo and a bunch of other young Jedi. Yeah, I mean, that's thrilling for the content. And now, like you said, even more thrilling for just realizing how beautifully it can be done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. A final moment of comedy, whimsy, weirdness for me is in that great action sequence where they are taking over the ATT and GS8 questions how they're going to do that. And Wrecker's like, well, I'll do it just by grabbing him. And Singh's hat goes flying. GS8 grabs it and holds it up real quick. Like, don't worry, I've got your hat. It's just a great, quick little dynamic of Wrecker is chaos and GS8 is trying to be order.
Yeah. Yeah.
Trying to hold on to that hat. I got your hat. I got your vase. We got this taken care of.
And then I had to catch the hat, 3PO.
Always leaving their clothing behind, too. All right, let's move on to canon, lore connections, and all that. Let's just dive into Raxus, Ken. Yep. The guest star of this episode, guest starring Raxus and Separatus. Raxus is also known as Raxus Secundus.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is different confusion with other planets that also have Raxus as part of their name. This is the capital city, Raxalon. this planet has been featured in the Clone Wars episode Heroes on Both Sides. Padme and Ahsoka meet Mina Bonteri there for a clandestine attempt to restart actual diplomacy with the Separatists. The planet is also featured in the Clone Wars era novel Dark Disciple. Dooku is getting an award there, I believe, for humanitarian services. So who knows? Maybe he's getting a Vaz too. I don't remember. But he's getting an award there when Quinlan Vos and Asajj Ventress attempt to kill him on this planet. The planet is also mentioned multiple times in the Tarkin novel. It's a part of the Tarkin novel where Tarkin has subjugated a moon. And Tar IV is a means to pressure Raxus to hand over remaining Separatists. Also from that Tarkin novel, it is mentioned that Dooku's speech where he had declared that the Republic is full of problems and there should be some sort of Separatist movement that was broadcast from the Raxus system. So a bunch of history of this planet as the seat of the political Separatist movement.
Yeah, and again, another planet in the Bad Batch where we get to go back to, or we get to spend more time on, or we get to learn more about. And this one, just a well use. It's not just a planet guest star of the week, like it's Love Boat or Fantasy Island. It has great purpose behind it. They use this one so effectively.
Yeah, and it continues to be this great thing where the Bad Batch has missions on different planets, and we get to see, based on what the planet, what was going on in the planet, their reaction to the Empire. I love that we got to see, you know, Cut Laquane and Sue being like, everybody came here to get away from this, so we're getting the hell out of town to Pantora. Like they're still in this honeymoon period, but I think it might be great, you know, to Ord Mantell, where everybody's hiding out, to this planet where it was a Separatist stronghold, so things are going to be really not good here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
And even get the story that the Empire is really having to try to figure out, like, okay, how are we going to put the boot down because they are resisting us?
Right. Yeah.
Any other thoughts for you on Raxus or the canon behind it?
No, just you mentioned that, you know, the Mina Monteri episode always been one of my favorites. We're close to getting to that in the Clone Wars report, which will resume after a Bad Batch report, but. I just love that because it's also something that's kind of, I would still say it's new in a way. In terms, you know, we didn't grow up with it in the 80s until it started showing up, what, in Force Unleashed, Raxus Prime, which is, this isn't the same. And they even had a comment, the connection's not been revealed, those kind of things. But just love hearing it, but then really, again, spending time on it. And just now it's what is new becomes old and comfortable and familiar in a great way in Star Wars. And I love that happens.
Yeah, and I think for me it is really a symbol of exploring things that are going to be familiar to fans who really pay attention to this kind of stuff, or fans who really want to read the Wikipedia entry the second the episode is done. But it's so it's got a little bit of your, what you're talking about, that familiarity of in that connection and that, ooh, that's awesome. But I also just feel like Bad Batch is concentrating on tips of the iceberg that we haven't seen too much of the iceberg and showing us a little bit more. And I really appreciated spending more time on this planet that is known, but, you know, it's not like it's Tatooine, right?
Yeah.
And it represents something else.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Then for me, there wasn't a ton of other canon stuff. We got to hear about the clearance codes, which I think are always a thing, but become a bigger thing with the old Empire. We got, of course, the Djarik, which is great. Right. We got the ITO droid or mind probe, complete with syringe close-up.
I love, and I was trying to think, other than not counting novels, but I'm like, on any animated show, live action show, have we seen a torture droid finish its job yet? Have we ever seen that? I don't think we have.
Yeah, we get to, you know, we get to hear that it did work on Leia for a while, very upsettingly, in different places in canon. We get to hear Leia's reflections on that. But yeah, no, it's nice that they stunned the mind probe. Mm-hmm. How did you feel about the syringe close-up? Was that for you like, okay, been there, done that? Or were you excited by the syringe close-up?
I liked it. It's so weird. And I'm like, yeah, that thing for torture. I love that. Nah, it's a good use of nostalgia. And for some people, maybe this might be their first time seeing it. Maybe they'll go back to New Hope and be like, New Hope's copying Bad Batch. I don't know. It just, I love it's I've got a bad feeling about this. All those kind of like little weird traditions in Star Wars. I celebrate them. They're part of why we come back. And so the syringe close up and a door slamming or a smoke bomb coming in and you'll never see it inject. I'm OK with that. It's a fun tradition.
You never want to see the syringe inject. Yeah. I really like seeing it because one, it's just like, yeah, it's from the Empire. Like, but remember, the Empire just started and Sidious is like, look, let's roll out all this cruel stuff right away, you know, let's get going with this.
Yeah, this one still had like the cellophane or like the little paper peel back cover off the, you know, lens you have to take off, you know.
Yeah, and it's not that the technology is new, because I know there's history with it and Sith stuff and all that, but it is really like, look, every, you know, just Imperials on planets, like, this is part of your kit. Let's go. This is part of the way our government works, you know. Unity in front, torture in the back. Let's go.
There's your t-shirt. Yeah, it's a loot box that you just got. So you've just joined the Empire or been forced to.
Take a mind probe. And then for me, the syringe, I've always enjoyed it, you know, and it's always just been part of Star Wars for me because it's, you know, it was in Star Wars. Yeah. But as I got older and there's a lot more criticism of every piece of Star Wars, and in particular, the Star Wars debate about what is too real world. It has really started to amuse me that, like, if that hadn't been in A New Hope and just in The Last Jedi, a mind probe showed up and it was just like a syringe.
Yeah.
You know, like you would just find down at the hospital, you could probably buy at Walgreens. A syringe is from the world. Syringe from Walgreens is just taped on this space ball. Dumb. I can just hear the criticisms, and but it's there because it's in the first Star Wars.
I've never thought about it that way. I love that you did that because you're so right. Just so right. Ruin Johnson, put a syringe in Star Wars and an iron. Oh, unbelievable. Yeah. Yes, it's so right. It's like, and it's a little floating ball with a syringe on it. You're so right. It's just, it's like, that's all they, George wants a torture droid. What do we got?
Yeah, this ball looks really cool, but it needs to be scarier. Tape a syringe. And it works, and it gets celebrated all these years later.
Yeah.
A couple other things for me. It was great to hear the Imperial alert horn many paces throughout this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And back on Ord Mantell, when they were returning, I believe there's a quick shot of a rat of some kind scurrying across a cable above the street on Ord Mantell. And it looked a lot like a very similar shot on Corellia from Solo. And I liked it.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Any other canon moments for you?
One little one. The tradition, another tradition being carried on. Stormtroopers being punched off screen. Just very reminiscent of New Hope. But just, yeah, those first two, they're trying to, you know, GSA gets them to come over. And all of a sudden, yoink, yoink, gunk, gunk, off camera.
Were you waiting to see, did you have that suspended moment when it was clear that this was going to happen off camera, if there was going to be blaster shots or punching noises?
Yeah. Yeah. And I thought, to be honest, I thought they were going to come around the corner in their armor. I don't know how logistically that would work. You get your armor off fast. But I just had that. It just immediately invoked that whole sequence.
No, it really did for me, because I was like, am I going to hear those very familiar blaster sounds? Or, oh, hey, punches. Much better. Much smarter, guys.
Yes.
Good job.
Good job.
Good job. All right. So that is our look at the canon connections in this episode of Bad Batch. So we move on to anything that we disliked or questioned. Ken, was there anything you disliked or questioned?
No. I never want to dig for the negative. So, but I asked myself again, I had that weird reaction at the end of the episode. And it's a beautiful moment with Hunter and Omega. And all right, tell you what, you beat me, knowing she probably will. You get on the, I loved it. Sweet moment. Talk about parenting in Star Wars and all the themes of this season. Great stuff. But it went to credits. And I went, all right, that's all they did this week. So, you know, immediately I took to my YouTube channel, got in my car and ranted about filler episodes. But and so I don't question it. Just and I think I mold that over my brain. And that's where I came to what I said at the top of the show. But just like, I think they're really just like, we know what we're doing. And we know that we aren't Mandalorian right now. And we are going to tell this story. And years from now, when you're doing a rewatch, when you're digging into a Bad Batch, this is the type of episode where people are like, oh, do you like that Raxus episode? Oh, I love that Raxus episode. And Bad Batch is already doing that. I've had conversations. My friend Van William, I've mentioned before, been on the, singer-songwriter, been on 474, big Star Wars fan. Yeah, he He's like, ah, I haven't watched Bad Batch yet. I said, just when you can do it. He texted me this week. He's like, holy crap. I just started. This is amazing. A friend of mine who actually has worked in Star Wars was like, I don't know. The trailers just didn't grab me. Is it all action and shooting? I like my Star Wars to be a little slower and introspective. And I was like, then this is the show for you. and I just love that Bad Batch really knows what it is right now. And even though there's some moments where as a fan, I can be like, oh, Boba Fett didn't show up with Aurra Sing and now I feel incomplete. This episode just really was like, here, this is the story we're telling. You're on board and you'll get there eventually. Just enjoy what we got right now.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point and great stories of people being unsure of like, is this just going to be kind of fun A-team in clone armor shooting stuff? I can see how you might be concerned about that from the trailers, but knowing that it is all doing a lot more. I think also I think of the words patience. I said words plural because I was thinking of saying patience twice. Patience, patience. We can watch an episode like this coming off of last week where you and I even discussed like, hey, our hopes for this episode, we said last week, are I hope Hunter really sits down and goes, all right, I got to make a decision. I got to be proactive. How can I protect Omega? How can I find out more? Do I want to go back to try to help Crosshair? What are we going to do? And so you can go into an episode like this and go like, okay, well, we were hoping for Hunter to make a big decision and make a big move. Mm-hmm. And then it can make you go like, okay, well, but then what happened in this episode? And that's where I say patience, patience.
Right.
We don't yet know how important what happened in this episode was.
Yeah.
And I think that's played out a lot in Mandalorian, mm-hmm. where people have certain episodes where they're like, well, what did we learn? And like, well, you learned this really important piece of information, or you met this character who's going to be really important down the line, or this thematic idea was introduced that's going to build that episode was necessary as a starting point. And I think there's a lot in this episode where it can feel like, hey, it's back to basics. The Bad Batch went on a mission and there was a funny side story with Omega. But I think there's a lot going on that there's building blocks in this episode.
Yeah, big building blocks. Yeah, absolutely. Star Wars building blocks, season one.
Yes, exactly. I think for me, the only thing I questioned this, I should answer this question more of the thing I craved is I so loved getting to spend time with the Separatists from a different point of view. Unlike the characters, I would have taken more politics.
I
don't know. Avi Singh could be one note character or one episode character, not a one note. One episode character, Sid takes him to the back, gets a payment, and he's off by the time we catch up. Or next episode could open with, like, got a new mission from you. You got to take this Avi Singh guy to your friend Rex. You know, we don't know yet. So there could be more with Avi. But the Separatist story has always just kind of been told around the edges, right? And I feel like this character, this era, is an opportunity to really explore in just a sort of crystal clear fashion this idea that there were people who had legitimate concerns who were manipulated by the Sith and by, you know, greedy, awful people like Wat Tambor. And to have somebody like Abhi Singh reflect on, my fears came true, but now with this new information I have, I also understand I was manipulated and my legitimate fears were turned into something awful.
Yeah, so this is a great, by the way, this is maybe something we should add, dislike, questioned, or craved. I really love the opening of this episode. It's again shot beautifully, to repeat that, but you got Captain Bragg, shout out to the great Shelby Young voicing her, and everything going on there. Like, I wouldn't mind seeing more of that character. I wouldn't mind seeing more Singh just having to really come to terms with it, like you're saying, like you're suggesting here. And I would love, because he's there, they're at the bar. So does next week start with all of them, GS8 going, I've never had alcohol. What is this, Sid? Is that kind of moment? Or is it like, look, he's made a decision. Are you going to make the decision with him? Or maybe it's Singh saying it. Maybe it's not Sid giving him a mission, but Singh going, all right, hey, look, I paid her off, but I got to go. This is where we got to go now. Maybe it's time I call that guy Bale I didn't get along with. You know, all those guys. I would really want that. I'm with you there. More politics in my Bad Batch.
Yeah. And again, much like our Boba Fett discussion last week, that doesn't feel like a different story taking over. I feel like, you know, this story started even with Saw Gerrera, one of the hugest symbols of the rebellion, going, hey, maybe make a choice. It's a different fight now. Same fight from Saw's perspective up to a point, but a different reality for the Bad Batch. Yeah. So this story of them kind of dancing on the edge of the rebellion has been in this the whole season, I think.
Yeah. And maybe my final point on that, or final thought on that, I should say, is going to what we're talking about up top. But one of the things I love is, like, yes, we are watching them and we know, hey, choose, man. We're rooting for them, right? Join the rebellion. But it's very realistic. This week was a very realistic episode of, yeah, you know what? I'm thinking of joining that. Wait, that guy's there? I hated that guy. And I got to deal with, I got to process things. I think was very realistic, along with some great action and funny moments. And this change not happening overnight, their ideology changing slowly. I really am there for that.
Yeah, absolutely. That they're starting from the point of, like, okay, where we can't live the lives we used to. So we're trying to figure out our lives. And then other people who are farther down this journey are being like, well, your life is tied to the rest of the galaxy. And you're seeing all of this evidence that you're not going to be able to escape the tyranny of the Empire. Mm-hmm. But they're still in that place of, like, well, we don't have our jobs anymore.
Yeah.
Who are we going to be? We've already kind of danced into this of talking about hopes for next episode. I want to get into that. And I want to ask you a specific question, Ken.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about what's established in this episode. Omega's talent with strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Big part of what this episode is. Do you think that's just a reflection of her unaltered DNA? She is good at strategy. Do you think Nala Se took her aside and really trained her on strategy? Or is this a bigger story point? Is this kind of one of the things that makes Omega unique, that this is one of her skill sets that make her unique even within clones? Is there something more there to this story of Omega's really good at strategy?
You're suggesting she's a Tarkin clone, and I just love that. Oh, no. Everything you're saying there, I'm like, check, right? Part engineering, to make a joke of it a little bit, but being on only on Kamino and just observing, maybe going through a different kind of training. Who knows, you know, if you're at the side of some of these, leaders on Kamino as they train, maybe you're picking some other stuff up, and also just this has to mean something, right? I don't necessarily think episode 16 is the storming of the castle and she has the plan, but it could be something like that. And you're right. We'll look back and go, yeah, this was revealed as a true skill and why it's key to the team. So all of the above, sir.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on where it comes from. I think there's some nature and nurture. There's a little bit of the DNA of her her father, if you want to frame it that way, of Jango Fett, and only if you want to frame it that way.
Yeah.
And training, but also it's really built well with everything we've seen from her, that she is really observant and sees opportunities that other characters don't, like, just like literally physically sometimes, but also strategically.
Yeah, observant is a great point. I mean, a lot of her just understanding this comes from, I mean, she's Thrawn-like, right? I understand who you're playing against. I understand the other people in the room. I learn about them, and it's not just the information I have that makes me a good strategy. It's the information I can pick up about just you yourself. I think it all factors in. Yeah.
Yeah, and I fully expect that by the time we are done recording this, there will be some memes with Omega being put in as the character from the Netflix show Queen's Gambit.
Oh, yes.
Who saw expert chess player in the great visual where she sees all the chess pieces on the ceiling. That's Omega with Dejerik. Sees the Dejerik pieces on the ceiling. So a couple other things that I wanted to specifically ask you about of hopes for next episodes. This episode really did highlight they're free of their debt from Sid. So now it would seem like, unless Sid's going to threaten them again of, like, I could turn you in unless you keep working for me. It's a question of whether they're going to keep working for her. Do you think the next episode will wrestle with that choice of, are we going to stay here or are we going?
I think it could. I almost said should, and I don't like that word in discussing Star Wars, right? I think it could. That's no small feat, right? And Omega doing that for the team and what that means. So I would like to see that combined with seeing I could be there for that. And I just really want just ramifications from their decision and their involvement. That's why even the character of Captain Bragg, if that character shows up, or just like, she's like, hey, it's this Bad Batch group did this. if this is not just this little one-off mission, and it shouldn't be to the Empire, right? Rax is a pretty important planet for them. Whether it's Crosshair or others, like the Nazgul are following them. I actually want to see the Empire pissed off about the Bad Batch now.
Yeah, no. If Bragg and Rampart share a holocall there, they've got some common problems.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, what would be exciting, no shoulds, what would make sense to me, what would be exciting is if in the next few episodes, trouble comes and finds them on Ord Mantell, either the Empire cracking down or a bounty hunter or two finding them on Ord Mantell, because I think that'll be a great pressure point on Hunter to be like, this can't just be the norm because they're going to find us wherever we go. So we need to address it in some way.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. The Empire coming there is intriguing to me.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of felt that when they got away from that Imperial controlled world, they've got away from a few Imperial controlled worlds, and Ord Mantell seems to be like, we're still able to kind of just hang out here, and like, for how long?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So exciting stuff for future episodes. Is there anything that we have not talked about that you wanted to touch on?
No, I think we covered everything in this, this wonderful little tank battle of an episode.
Yeah. I wanted to be sure to, as you already did, highlight Alexander Siddig. Love a ton of his performances. I recently, over the old lockdown, rewatched all of Deep Space Nine, so he's been on my mind a lot. So I'm great to see and hear him doing stuff. The other thing, we often shout out the music. The ambient music in Sid's parlor was really great this episode. Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Yeah. And we also should highlight, I am not super familiar with her. I know she was in Fleabag. A lot of people love, I'm not sure how to say the name, Cyan Clifford, who is GS8. Wonderful performance as well. Really struck a good tone.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. I did not. I'm going to have to go cross reference because I did not realize that was the person from Fleabag. That's awesome.
Yeah, and then now you have her and Phoebe Waller-Bridge from Fleabag being great droids in Star Wars.
Yeah. Now we just need Hot Priest, who is another important character in Fleabag.
There you go.
All right. So we always wrap up our discussions. We talk about a lot of big ideas, a lot of fun ideas, action ideas, but we end with something that's very close to our hearts, and that's toys. Ken, if you could have a figure or a toy inspired by this episode, what do you want?
There are a lot of great figure options. I'll say that for sure. You might have some too, but I want a breakaway Funko Pop vase. the special edition Ned Stark with the detached head back at Comic-Con a few years ago. Wonderfully tasteless in the best way. Thank you, Funko. So I want that too. Just a vase that you can hit, it's soft, so you can hit your own head and it breaks.
Oh, I love it. That I was going to say that too. I want a nice vintage collection, obviously, 3¾ with two vases. One that's still intact and the one that's shattered.
I actually really love that. Yeah, a good accessory.
I also think we're getting pretty close to that place where maybe we just need in real world a huge Dejeric tables that we can purchase for our homes.
I mean, if you got it, there's got to be some Disney Imagineer that's like, how do we get this to Galaxy's Edge? Right. What they want. Real life. Yeah, it's great. We want real life Dejeric.
I can't wait to wake up at 5 a.m. in a hotel by Disney and desperately smash the button on my phone to try to get reservations to play Dejeric.
So true.
It would be a nightmare. This is a weird one because I'm always focusing on toys, but I want a coloring book called Bolo and Ketch Take It Outside. And it's just page after page of them fighting, and you get to color it in.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great. Yeah, we do need a flip book of their adventures. Coloring book's a great idea.
Yeah, we celebrate Bolo and Ketch with something somehow. Yeah. That is our big look at Chapter 10, Common Ground. Ken, do you want to let people know where they can find us?
I absolutely do. You can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram, YouTube as well. You can also go to our Facebook page, which is Force Center Podcast. You can get an audiobook on us on Audible at audibletrial.com/Force Center. Again, that's audibletrial.com/Force Center. We have merch available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. You can support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center. Don't forget, top tier, you get the Force Center trading cards, new bags. batch. We'd run out of stock. We got a new batch in. So some people are going to get those soon. And we got some stickers as well. We throw in that pack. So that's if you support at the top tier. But we just appreciate any kind of support for supporting what we do here. We have a lot of fun. Don't forget, you can find us on a lot of spots, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Amazon Music, and Spotify as well. You can find me at Catnapsock or my website, catnapsock.com. And you, Joseph.
Yeah, you can find me on social media, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, all at Joseph Scrimshaw. And then you can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all of my other comedy adventures. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for all the Vazes and all the tanks, this has been the Bad Batch Report.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.